Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to a special edition of the Sunny Side of Sports, celebrating the life and legacy of the late, great Muhammad Ali.
I am the greatest. He talks a great deal and brags indeed of a muscular punch that's incredibly speedy. The fistic world was dull and weary. With a champ like Liston, things had to be dreary. Then someone with color, someone with dash, brought fight fans a running with cash.
Show me the money.
This brash young boxer is something to see, and the heavyweight championship is his destiny. This kid fights great. He's got speed and endurance. But if you sign to fight him, increase your insurance. I am the greatest.
The greatest, Muhammad Ali. One of the most charismatic, controversial, celebrated, and significant athletes in history. Died June 3rd in a hospital in the western U.S. state of Arizona. He was 74. Ali's family said the cause was septic shock. The three-time world heavyweight boxing champion was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease more than 30 years ago, and the man once nicknamed the Louisville Lip was silent for much of that time. Our opening bell rings now for Muhammad Ali with this profile by VOA's Ted Lanfair.
The signature boast of the son of a Kentucky sign painter who took up boxing after neighborhood bullies stole his bicycle. Born Cassius Marcellus Clay, Jr., he was soon known as the Louisville Lip for his taunts and homespun poems in an amateur fighting career topped by a light heavyweight gold medal at the 1960 Summer Olympics in Rome. Clay shocked the boxing world by winning his first 19 professional fights and knocking out Sonny Liston for the World Heavyweight Championship in 1964. "You're an old, ugly bear," Clay said to Liston's face. To describe himself, he offered a verse.
This brash young boxer is something to see, and the heavyweight championship is his destiny. This kid fights great. He's got speed and endurance. But if you sign to fight him, increase your insurance.
A year before the Liston fight, Cassius Clay had joined the Nation of Islam, known as the Black Muslims, and afterward he announced he had changed his name to Muhammad Ali. "I had been a Negro. I had no confidence," was all he would say on the subject, but he brimmed with self-assurance now. Using a duck-and-weave style that he called his float-like-a-butterfly, sting-like-a-bee technique, he was graceful yet ferocious in the ring. Outside it, he kept crowds and reporters laughing. Before his 1975 title fight with Joe Frazier in the Philippines, Ali pulled a toy gorilla out of his pocket.
"It will be a killer and a thriller and a killer when I get the gorilla in Manila."
1974, a year before the thrilla in Manila bout, fans in Zaire had followed his every move surrounding what came to be called the Rumble in the Jungle with George Foreman.
"Even today I meet people and they bring up the Ali fight and they still think the fight is going on. They need to be on my side or Ali. It doesn't exist anymore, but you learn great lessons from those defeats. You learn that it's just a day in your life. It shouldn't be taken over. It shouldn't consume you. And it's just a moment. And enjoy every moment."
"Boumaye," the crowd shouted. "Kill him, Ali." Brutal words for perhaps the world's most famous pacifist, who in 1967 refused U.S. military service despite the threat of 5 years in prison and a hefty fine. He said at the time,
"My conscience won't let me go shoot my brother or some darker people or some poor hungry people in the mud for big powerful America and shoot them for what? They never called me nigger."
On college campuses nationwide, Ali spoke out against the Vietnam War while his case was appealed, and ultimately the U.S. Supreme Court reversed his draft evasion conviction. Muhammad Ali won 56 of 61 professional fights in his last two bouts in 1980 and 1981. He was already showing the debilitating effects of Parkinson's disease, the brain disorder that affects muscle control. In one of his last television interviews in 1985,
I don't know why I'm the most known American on earth.
The shuffle and slurred speech brought on by the baffling disease were evident. John Walter, an adjunct professor of ethnic studies at the University of Washington, calls Ali the quintessential American, generous and caring, provocative, courageous physically and in his convictions, and boastful, but backing up his crowing with incredible deeds. Professor Walter says Ali's influence has reached the world's humblest hamlets.
Down in Australia among the Aborigines, these people saw him. They took an example from how he conducted his life, that he's willing to stand up for their rights, so to speak, and to excel at the same time. You will find many, many examples of people who say, I owe what I'm doing to this man. That, to me, is profound.
Other words of admiration tumbled upon each other at the dedication of the $80 million Muhammad Ali Center in Ali's hometown of Louisville. Former President Bill Clinton said Ali, who in 1990 negotiated the release of 15 U.S. hostages in direct negotiations with Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein, was a force for peace.
You proved once again that the power of example matters a lot more than the example of power.
Just be a beautiful fight. Ooh, I'll be dancing. I'll be so pretty. Ooh.
Muhammad Ali once said of himself, he talks a lot and boasts indeed of a power punch and blinding speed. And he asked, how could anyone not see American in the following? I am the greatest. I'm Ted Lanfair.
Thanks, Ted. The great fighter was honored in 2005 when the Muhammad Ali Center opened in his birthplace of Louisville, Kentucky. Reporter Rick Howlett in Louisville tells us more about the center.
It was boxing that made Muhammad Ali, born Cassius Clay, one of the world's most recognized figures. There's plenty of boxing memorabilia in the Ali Center, but everyone associated with it is quick to say that it's not a shrine to the sport or to the man. Lonnie Ali, his wife, is his caretaker and his spokesperson.
We realized if we were going to pursue this seriously, that it had to be something that spoke to the man in whole, that it had to be something that contributed to society, to others. It couldn't be just about Muhammad, because we never wanted that. We didn't want anything to idolize Muhammad. So what? I mean, what does that do for anybody? Nothing.
In addition to the exhibit celebrating Muhammad Ali's boxing career and the various significant events in his life, there are six pavilions. Center President Michael Fox explains that each represents what Ali calls his core values: respect, confidence, conviction, dedication, giving, and spirituality.
That's the foundation of this institution. There is not another institution on the face of this earth that has that as its underpinning. That is what all of our programming hereafter will evolve from. These six values.
The opening of the Muhammad Ali Center was marked with a series of events, including a celebrity gala and fundraiser attended by notables from the worlds of sports, entertainment, and politics.
The world is a better place because of you.
Former U.S. President Bill Clinton was among those who recognized Ali's achievements.
You thrilled us as a fighter, and you inspire us even more as a force for peace and reconciliation, understanding and respect. And now you've got this center which will enshrine both your thrills and your inspiration and inspire others to follow your lead.
Visitors to the Muhammad Ali Center will see and hear details related to two major events in Ali's life that at the time drew scorn from much of the American public. One was his conversion to Islam in 1964, which prompted his name change. The other came 2 years later when he refused, on religious grounds, to be drafted into military service for the Vietnam War. As the legal battle that resulted from his draft resistance made its way through the courts, Ali would be barred from boxing professionally for 3 years until the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in his favor. Longtime boxing promoter Bob Arum points out that Ali's refusal to join the service predated the American anti-war movement.
People don't remember that the war in Vietnam was not an unpopular war when it started. It became horribly unpopular. He was considered to be a traitor to his country. And he had the courage to stand up to everybody, friends and foe, and to say that what he was doing was the right thing.
It was that event that raised Ali's profile from a pugilist to a peace advocate, according to his friend, musician James Taylor.
He really woke us up. You know, we helped America wake up by associating with his process, really. We came to know so much more about ourselves and about injustice, about just because of the magnetism of his personality and his persona. He captured us all, and we felt what he felt. You know, he was an amazing communicator of his personal experience to so many people. He's an astounding character in our cultural history and on the world stage.
And took away that slave named Cassius Clay. Now I can go all over the world. All over the world.
As one of the most colorful sports figures in the 1960s and 70s, Muhammad Ali inspired young people around the world. That part of his legacy is showcased in a large mosaic wall made up of 5,000 small wood tiles. Children from 144 nations created the images, reflecting their hopes and dreams. In addition to the many exhibits in the center's 8,600 square meter interior, there are classrooms for community outreach programs. These include a conflict resolution curriculum for children, created with the help of the United Nations, and a variety of self-improvement courses for all ages. The Ali Center's president, Michael Fox, says that like the great athlete it honors, the new facility puts great emphasis on the power of personal development.
We encourage and will work with our visitor public and our participants in our programming to have them think much more about their personal values, much more about their personal development. We often say the Muhammad Ali Center is about Ali, and it's about me, all of us, individually.
I'm Rick Howlett in Louisville, Kentucky.
Thanks, Rick.
Voice of America, VOA, Washington.
I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to a special edition of the Sunny Side of Sports on the life and legacy of former world heavyweight boxing champion Muhammad Ali. The late Hall of Fame trainer Angelo Dundee was in the corner for Ali's greatest fights. Angelo was also a good friend of the Sunny Side of Sports, delighting our Voice of America listeners for more than a decade with his colorful and often funny commentary about Ali in particular and pro boxing in general. One of Ali's greatest victories took place on October 30th, 1974, in Kinshasa, the capital of the Democratic Republic of Congo, then known as Zaire. His eighth-round knockout of then-heavyweight champion George Foreman became known as the Rumble in the Jungle. Let's listen in now to a phone call I made to Angelo Dundee in Florida to ask him about the epic heavyweight contest.
Hello.
Hey, Angelo.
Yeah.
This is Sonny Young from Voice of America.
Yeah.
How you doing?
All right.
Angelo, reflect a little bit. What are your main memories of that fight in the former Zaire?
Well, you know, it's such an event. You know, you get there and we're the good guys. You know, right there, Ali Boumaye. And he was like a hero there. And the Zaire people are so goddamn nice. It's a shame. You know, the country's having their problems. And everybody I met there was so congenial and nice. And the fun part of it was a guy named Chimpupu Chimpupu Wa Chimpupa. He was the PR guy.
Okay.
And he'd make us go. See, we were outside of Kinshasa. We were like 45 minutes away in the government complex called Nasseli. That's where they entertain all the African nations. And we all had villas facing the Congo River. And God forbid we said Congo River. It was going to get called the Zaire River. And we used to look forward to going to the gym every day. In fact, on my off duties, I used to train lizards. It made a good hit with the newspaper guys. When they came, it was a rainy day. We didn't go to the gym. And these lizards, these big lizards, we walking across like the banisters.
Right.
And I said, wait a minute, let me tell you what I did. And I said, see that lizard? I trained that sucker. Now watch, he's going to go five steps and do push-ups. No matter where you go, you got to have a sense of humor.
Angelo, did Foreman train close to Muhammad, or were they?
He trained right across the way from us, and we used to spy on him. I used to borrow Howard Bingham's telescopic lens and watch him from behind the hiding spots. We're like little kids, you know, because you don't see nothing in the gym. There's nothing to check, you know. But we had fun, so. This is the whole key, you know. People don't realize to excel at what you do, you got to have fun with it. And we always had fun with Muhammad every day. Every day, 19 years, I had fun, you know. So what the hell? This is what it's all about.
Angelo, was the weather a factor in that fight, the heat in the former Zaire?
Well, you got to remember, we trained in Florida, Miami. Muhammad loves the heat. In fact, to this day, Muhammad calls me, he threatens me, he's going to come down and sweat. I says, please do.
Do you think the heat bothered Big George more than it did Muhammad?
Well, no. I just think it was meant to be, you know, this is what happens in boxing. Isn't that a horrible career to have, you know, if somebody out there can lick you? Isn't that tough? I mean, you're a great fighter, and there's somebody out there might do a number on you. The only guy that didn't taste that was Rocky Marciano, God bless him, because he retired undefeated. And another kid from Thailand retired undefeated.
Angelo, looking back on the Rumble in the Jungle, would that fight have happened without the electric-haired man, Don King?
No, he was in the right place at the right time. Had the connections, the complexions to give us the right direction. That's what Muhammad used to say about me. Angela got the connections and the directions to give me the right direction. That's right. So we applied it the other way. No, it was meant to be. Don King's a hell of a promoter. He went there and they wanted to name their country a new name, you know, get rid of that Belgian Congo thing, and then name their country Zaire. And Mobutu's a very, very, you know, that Zaire's a big country. I think it's bigger than the United States. Yeah, big. And this guy ran it. He was a remarkable guy. He used to go all his provinces by helicopter. He was a hell of a man.
Angela, where does the Rumble in the Jungle rate in the Muhammad Ali legacy?
Well, it's got to be one of the greatest happenings, the changing of a name, government. Well, Muhammad, you know, was a happening any place we ever went. You know, I get letters 10 a week maybe, you know, letting us want pictures and stuff like that. It's remarkable, you know, because here I was with a guy who was a living legend. And in his career now, I'm his fistic voice because the guy can't talk. And I know it breaks his heart. He loved to talk. He loved it because he loved talking to the media. He enjoyed that. And I pride myself with that. I pushed them towards that because if you want to be a superstar, these guys will make you a superstar. And, you know, that's why he was so great with the media. He was the first superstar that did that. Never happened before.
Who are the top three heavyweights of all time?
Top three? Let me see. First one, Muhammad. Second, Muhammad. The third one, Muhammad. Top three. With the other one, seriously. You got to give, you know, Marciano belongs in there because retired undefeated heavyweight champion of the world. He was for real. You know, you got to put Joe Louis there. Top three is tough. It'll be very crowded. Dempsey'd have to be there. And all their eras, they were great champions, those guys. And you got to respect them all. But the guy that gave you so much, you knew when the kid fought, you got a big charge. Muhammad created a scene. No matter who he fought. And a lot of those guys he fought never would have been known unless Muhammad fought them. The Joe Frazers, know what I mean? The Liston had to be there. And see, right away, the top three is going to be a very crowded situation.
In terms of Muhammad's fights, Angelo, would you put the Rumble in the Jungle in the former
set?
The Rumble in the Jungle, would that be one of Muhammad's top three fights?
The Thrill in Manila, God. The Rumble in the Jungle. Well, the Rumble in the Jungle, because the dramatics for a country trying to get a new name, you know what I mean? That comes into play. And what the heck? Look at the greatness of a George Foreman. He'd come out after 10 years, and he'd come out, and the man got to be heavyweight champion. I think it's remarkable. George Foreman is one of the remarkable guys in that division. So you need more than three slots to bring around great champions, because George was great.
You mentioned Joe Frazier, Angelo. If Joe Frazier wasn't around, do you think the legacy of Muhammad Ali would be what it is today?
Well, you see, guys blend with each other. The perfect blend was Frazier. Of course, whenever you threw those two guys into a situation, it had to be excitement.
That's the late Hall of Fame boxing trainer Angelo Dundee, who provided plenty of excitement on our Voice of America airwaves for more than a decade. Angelo died in 2012 at the age of 90. Angelo talked about George Foreman, one of Muhammad Ali's greatest rivals. The 67-year-old Foreman took to Twitter after Muhammad Ali's death and wrote the following: Ali, Frazier, and Foreman, we were one guy. A part of me slipped away. The greatest piece. Muhammad Ali, Joe Frazier, and George Foreman, besides being part of some epic rivalries, also shared a common Olympic pedigree. They were all Olympic champions. Ali won gold at Rome 1960. Frazier won gold at Tokyo 1964. And Foreman won gold at Mexico City 1968. For his part, George Foreman says there will never be another Muhammad Ali.
Muhammad Ali is something you would never see. I met the most nice-looking, the most handsome guy I'd ever met in my life, and he was a boxer. I mean, he belongs to the arts. He belongs to politicians, and he belongs to science. What a phenomenon. It's something we won't see again, I can tell you that. The one thing about Muhammad, we would meet all the time and discuss Bible scriptures and religion. We'd argue so much and argue that we get thirsty, and hope to meet again so that we could do some more arguing and get thirsty. But we always ended with a big embrace. He loved me.
And people all over the world loved Muhammad Ali. There has been an outpouring of affection and admiration from all over the globe since Ali died on June 3rd. Earlier in the show, we heard from former U.S. President Bill Clinton. He'll lead the eulogies at a public memorial on Friday, June 10th, in Muhammad Ali's hometown of Louisville, Kentucky. Actor Billy Crystal and American TV sports presenter Bryant Gumbel are also scheduled to deliver eulogies at the memorial service. There will also be a funeral procession on Friday, taking Muhammad Ali's body through the streets of Louisville, past the Muhammad Ali Center, and travel along the street named after him, Muhammad Ali Boulevard. An Ali family spokesman says the procession will allow anyone who's there from around the world to say goodbye. Louisville's Mayor Greg Fisher talks about Ali's legacy.
His legacy is to be the greatest. He would always say, you know, have a passion, have conviction, but get up before everybody else and do the road work. That's how he became the greatest boxer of all time. And oftentimes people want to be the greatest, but they don't want to put in the work to do that. So it's about finding that greatness within you and realizing it. His message was everybody can be great, but you got to find that and find a path forward. Lift each other up, unify, celebrate our differences. That's who we are as a people. Well, Muhammad was a supernatural force, whether it was through his religions, early Christian, then convert to Islam, young, strong black man in many ways before his time, civil rights era, bigger than life in the boxing ring, three-time world champion, coming back, you know, from despair, winning again, never giving up, and then later in his life, biggest, baddest humanitarian of all time. So he spoke to so many people in so many different ways around the world.
Around the world, people are remembering Muhammad Ali. I like what the Louisville mayor said about lift each other up, unify. The great American singer-songwriter Bob Dylan, a big boxing fan, touched on that when he remembered Muhammad Ali, writing, and I quote, "If the measure of greatness is to gladden the heart of every human being on the face of the earth, then he truly was the greatest. In every way, he was the bravest, the kindest, and the most excellent of men. Brave, kind, excellent. Rest in peace, Muhammad Ali.
Next, an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
This month, Americans will complete an important part of the process of selecting the candidates for which they will vote in November for the office of President of the United States. The two major political parties in America, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, will hold the last of the statewide political primary elections or caucuses in which voters in those states choose delegates to the national conventions of those parties. The delegates, in turn, will choose their party's candidate for president. The framers of the Constitution of the United States disliked and distrusted political parties. In a famous treatise on government, James Madison, one of the framers of the Constitution and later President of the United States, warned that the public good is disregarded in the conflicts of rival parties. The Constitution makes no mention of parties, but instead provides for the president to be chosen by electors from each state, constituting what is called the Electoral College. In the first two presidential elections, George Washington was nominated and elected by the Electoral College. But by 1796, political parties had emerged, and party caucuses within the U.S. Congress and the state legislatures selected the candidates for which the Electoral College would vote. The party caucus system gave way in 1832 to the National Party Convention, usually made up of delegates selected by the party conventions in the various states. The party convention system was dominated by party leaders and political bosses, a process lacking in transparency and often taking little account of the wishes of the voters. In 1901, Florida became the first state to hold a presidential primary to select delegates to a national convention. In the decades that followed, more and more states moved toward a primary election system, which diminished the role of party leaders and empowered voters to choose the candidates. By 1992, Democrats had primaries in 40 states and Republicans in 39. Today, primaries are conducted by state and local governments. Caucuses are conducted by party officials. Some states have primaries, others have caucuses or a combination of both. The primary system, like democracy itself, has its flaws and is faced with many challenges. But in the U.S., it is, in the main, ordinary voters, not party leaders or government officials, who choose the candidates for America's highest office.
That was an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
Hello, Africa. This is James Brotte, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Linor Moudou. Please join me live every Tuesday at 1730 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.
VOA News.
VOA. When news breaks, VOA News is there.
Around the clock, listen to VOA Newscast at the top of each hour, along with our detailed news programs and analysis.
We are online at voanews.com.
VOA, your trusted source of news and information.